Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello and welcome back to the weekend podcast of Lotus Eaters. I'm here with Josh and we're going to pick up where we left off yesterday, which is, and we're talking about learned helplessness. And we're going to continue with how it affects humans and what it actually means and why it might be reversed than what we talked about yesterday.
Sure. And I just want to go over the definition one more time, just to refresh your memory. So learned helplessness is a mental state in which an organism is forced to tolerate adverse stimuli or stimuli that are painful or otherwise unpleasant and becomes unable or unwilling to avoid subsequent encounters with those stimuli, even if they are escapable, presumably because it has learnt it cannot control the situation. So that is the kind of original definition that I'm going to talk about why it is perhaps not exactly the case.
Yep.
So this comes from research from Seligman and Meyer again, but this is from 2016, so much later on, and they're using neuroscience instead. So you can take a look at this paper. It's actually very good because it is like a retrospective of their work as well. So they're talking about it, the theory being 50 years old, and they give a lot of background about it that's quite accessible.
So they're, they're like 90 now.
What was that, sorry?
They're like 90 now or something.
I don't know. I didn't check, but they must be pretty old if they were doing research in the late 60s and they're still going.
Famous research.
Yeah, yeah. And this also has some of the quotes that I was using in part one, and I think is the first place you would want to go to if you actually want to read about this a bit more.
All right.
So I'm just going to read the key part of this research paper, which explains why it's perhaps not exactly the case that their previous assumptions were true. So they say the following. The default unlearned response to prolonged aversive events, and this is mediated by the serotonergic activity of the dorsal raphe nucleus, which in turn inhibits escape. So you don't need to understand the neuroscience of it, but anyway. This passivity can be overcome by learning control with the activity of the medial prefrontal cortex, which subserves the detection of control leading to the automatic inhibition of the dorsal raphe nucleus. So animals learn that they can control adverse events, but the passive failure to learn to escape is an unlearned reaction to prolonged aversive stimulation. So essentially what they're trying to say is that doing nothing is the default, and we learn to overcome the helplessness that we find ourselves. And this is...
And how did they actually find that out? Because like obviously the control group of the dogs was that they hadn't been conditioned to anything, and then they escaped because that's what they did, because they felt that they weren't helpless, presumably, right? And so why did they?
Well, because it's a neuroscientific study, what they can do is they can just look at the parts of the brain that are more active in the different conditions. So they say here that the prefrontal cortex overcomes the kind of hardship, and the prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain here, like associated with things like personality, and it's more higher brain function. So it's one of the parts of the brain that human beings actually have most like development in compared to other animals, and it's more pronounced in human beings than other mammals.
So if I understand this correctly, this is a neurological argument. So how does that tie into the dogs actually escaping if they have no previous experience? They don't know that they can escape, but they do. That's not in line with it. So how do I understand that?
Okay. So essentially, the default is that they can't escape, of course. And then through learning, they learn that they cannot escape. So it's like a two-way thing where the learning affects the default, if that makes any sense.
Yes, but with these findings, they want to reverse it, right? So they want to say that helplessness is not learned, is the default.
Sure.
And then they actually learn to escape. So are they saying that the dogs had in their previous lives learned?
In their previous lives,
before they became part of that experience, right? So before they became part of the experience, that they had learned through just like living, that they can escape the situation when something's bad happening to them.
Yeah.
That's why this kind of switched in their heads before they started the experiment.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the default was different at the start of the experiment.
It's a very difficult thing to isolate a dog from just any negative stimuli.
Yeah.
So it's going to have exposure to it prior to the experiment, even if it's just kept in a lab. So it's going to have some degree of learning, but it's just how that learning affects its behavior. And essentially, they just had it the other way around, where they believed that they learnt to be helpless, whereas it's actually that they learn to overcome the helplessness.
Right. And so they had learned that before they started the experiment, but the experience just like reinforced the helplessness that is the default from the beginning.
Yeah, right. So that's why they refer to it as unlearning. So,
right, yeah, that makes sense, yeah. Okay, I understand it now. That was a bit confusing. It's like, well, why are they escaping if that's what they're not supposed to do? I know what
it's always framed in very confusing language. So, it's even confusing to me sometimes just trying to explain it.
They don't help this by including in their summary the neurological terms that most people don't understand. So.
Of course, yeah. Well, it was originally an academic paper, so it was meant to be my kind of job to simplify it enough to be understood. But there in the end.
Yep, exactly.
So I thought, although obviously there's strong evidence to suggest that it exists, and there have been repeated studies from the 60s onwards to show that this is a thing, and it manifests in lots of different animals and human beings, largely mammals. However, we've not really looked too much into how it affects human beings, which is what I really want to get onto. And although there's lots of research to suggest it exists, there's not so much to suggest why and how it impacts everyday behavior in human beings. So I thought, it'd be good to speculate. I've got a few research papers in different areas looking at how learned helplessness can affect things, and I thought it'd be particularly interesting to consider it in a political sense, because I feel like my rationale for this entire podcast is that it plays a role in people's psychology when it comes to solving issues and problems, which politics is more or less the domain of, and therefore I feel like learned helplessness can be the kind of default position of people in political life. So they feel like things are beyond their control, and therefore they kind of despair and feel like they can't help themselves, and therefore they do less to kind of solve these problems than you would have otherwise assumed. And I'm going to talk about that in some more detail. So
well, that sounds interesting. So let's get into the studies that you talk about.
So essentially, the results show that in education, the personality traits of conscientiousness, extroversion, openness to experience, and agreeableness, which are the big five of personality, which many people will be familiar with through the work of Jordan Peterson, and also on the second half of my unconscious bias training podcast. So anyway, these factors correlate positively with high school self-efficacy, quality of life as a student, and mastery orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how much you want to focus on mastery and how you orient yourself at getting better at stuff, essentially. Whereas these traits correlate negatively with learned helplessness. So being conscientious, which means hardworking, being extroverted or being socially oriented, it correlates negatively with that. Being open, it correlates negatively with that. You're seeing a trend here. And of course, agreeableness as well, because it's all five of them. So
Right. And so what does that mean? Like I'm hearing, okay, if you got these traits, mm-hmm. You'll do better as a student. But how does that tie into learned helplessness? Like what does
it's showing that it affects your personality and your attitude towards self-betterment, essentially. So the kind of crux of the experiment is that there is an observable difference between these virtuous kids that have all of the high values on these big five personality traits, and then these kids that have learnt to be essentially helpless or right. remain in the default position, if we're going by the more up-to-date neurological kind of evidence, that they're still in this kind of default position of feeling like they can't help themselves. And this is what perhaps might be behind the differences in academic achievement. That's what right. they're trying to suggest. Does that make sense?
So if I'm understanding correctly, these traits, conscientiousness, extroversion, openness, is that something that people learn that is not innate? Like that is that the argument that if you have people who are by default mm-hmm. helpless and they feel like they can't do much, they just can't help the situation around them, like they're sure. not going to develop these traits, which then these traits lead to good academic achievements, let's say.
Well, it could simply be that the cause and effect might be reversed, in that people who have learned helplessness might not be very good with these five traits, or it might be people low on these five traits might not be very good with dealing with learned helplessness. So right. yep. it could be either way. Mm-hmm. We don't really know yet because there isn't enough research. But essentially what it's trying to get at is that this is something that is ingrained metacognitively. Like it's not, mm-hmm. your personality is a very conscious part of who you are. I mean, it's probably the defining thing for a lot of people. So if this learned helplessness has such a huge effect on who you are as a person, it seems to suggest that it may have lots of large underlying consequences. And that's what they seem to find in this study, where they find things like the trait of emotional instability correlates well with learned helplessness, and also negatively with school self-efficacy, quality of life mm-hmm. as a student. So it seems like there's at least some role in academic success with learned helplessness, in that if you learn how to better help yourself, you're not going to fall victim to this. And it's kind of the argument that it's about individual virtue, and that's how you succeed. And that's right. that's it kind of returns to Aristotle as many things do. That doing things which help you mm-hmm. In a kind of what's the word?
No, you're saying that if when people want to actually make their life better, they need to learn to overcome the helplessness, right?
Yeah,
rather than the other way around, rather than expect things to be good around them and then mm-hmm. having good life, and that's just gonna happen, right?
Sure.
At least that's what I think you were getting.
Yeah,
if I'm correct.
That's what I was getting. Yeah. And you can actually kind of find a reinforcement for that point, because there was another look at learned helplessness in education, looking at test anxiety,
okay.
which is just anxiety in anticipation of a test, yep. as you can probably deduce. and essentially, adolescents who view their teachers as positive motivators are somewhat buffered against learned helplessness. So that's showing that is a tangible thing that they can kind of rely on to avoid feeling helpless.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that they obviously learn. They learn the nature of their teacher, and then they know that they can rely on them to help motivate them to succeed.
Right.
And that's like, that's taking it out of the abstract and making it a bit more tangible, in that they are able to do something about their hardships, right, and that is rely on their teacher. But obviously, yeah, if you don't have a teacher that you view as a positive motivator, you're going to have a bit more learned helplessness, essentially.
Yeah. That's, yeah. And so how is learned helplessness actually measured? Is it just self-reported? Like, how do you feel that things are hopeless, or that you can't do anything, that you can't affect your surroundings? Like, how is that?
Well, it's essentially, it's almost like, it's not like something you can get on a scale or place a numerical value on. But for example, you can rely on self-report where people say, okay, I was in this situation, I felt like I couldn't do anything. Or in the case of the study of children, they essentially just set them up with cases where they could fail and it was actually beyond their control. Like, mm-hmm, the test was set up for them to fail,
right,
to see their reaction, right, to it. And essentially they were able to see how they dealt with that.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore they were able to say, okay, these people are doing things to mitigate this potential failure, or at least trying to. Obviously they couldn't succeed, yeah, if, yeah, yeah, it was set up to make, yeah, them fail, but they're at least doing things to combat it. Whereas there was another group of people who were just willing to accept that, you know, yeah, this is who I am. I am a failure. And I will accept that.
Instead of cut out.
Yeah, end it there, right there.
No, so yeah, like that makes total sense. Like that's I think it's that sounds like a good way to measure something like this. Think
it, mm-hmm, it doesn't actually have to rely on any perception. You can, mm-hmm, just logically infer who's doing what,
yep,
and you avoid all of the pitfalls of having to come up with tests that measure personality constructs and stuff like that.
Yep.
And I would like to look at a different area, which is environmentalism.
Okay.
And this one is quite amusing, actually. So this paper essentially says that environmental activists fail to modify their behavior based on their beliefs, as in essentially that they're hypocrites, that they have beliefs about the environment and about things like recycling, which they perhaps do not do in their actual life, and okay, that their beliefs are inconsistent with their own behavior. And they actually looked at environmental beliefs and like environmentalist behavior and tried to see whether they,
right, right,
whether they correlated with one another, and they seem to think they didn't, because they believed that learned helplessness essentially moderates the link between environmental concern and the self-reported pro-environmental behavior. So
is that basically saying that they say we have these environmental problems and,
yeah,
we need to do a lot to solve them, but I can't do anything personally because, yeah, we need like kind of mass action or something like that.
So they feel like their individual actions don't actually amount to much. Therefore,
right,
they feel like no matter what they do,
yeah,
that it's going to happen anyway. Therefore,
right,
why bother? Even though that they hold these beliefs and their actions are inconsistent with their behavior. No, their actions are inconsistent with their thoughts.
Yeah, yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Got it around the wrong way.
But, okay, so is that like specific actions, as in their personal life, like recycling,
yeah,
you mentioned, right?
Yeah.
But so you might was it measured that this is across all the actions? Is it do they do the same things around, for example, environmental activism? So if you have an activist that thinks, if I do something just on my own, it's not going to matter, but if I talk to a lot of people and if I convince them that this is a big issue and they all start doing that, that way I can have an impact, right?
It's even worse than that, because it's their own self-reported.
Oh, okay.
So it's even their own reported behavior is inconsistent with their own views.
So this is the learned helplessness, mm-hmm, in this case was assessed at least partly by what they told the researchers,
and right, I believe that they did it like a follow-up where they actually observed as well, just to corroborate what they found,
okay,
which basically supported the self-report
So it wasn't just like, me recycling is not going to make a difference, but it was like, it's not going to make a difference no matter what I do. Just my activism and my raising awareness is not going to make any difference either. Like, this is
I don't think they necessarily told them what the intention of the experiment was. Right. They just wanted to know what their views were and what their behavior was, mm-hmm. and then whether mm-hmm. they were consistent or not.
Yeah. Okay.
And it seemed like they weren't. And then this was used as a potential explanation for it.
Interesting. Okay.
It's also been linked to poverty, which, I mean, is pretty unsurprising. I think that's the first example that anyone would jump to when they hear about this, at least in human beings. Mm-hmm. And this research says being in existential poverty means that living in a state of or near persistent material poverty while also being socially excluded, marginalized, or disadvantaged. And that's a pretty standard definition of poverty.
It's not just material, yeah.
Yeah, sure. And it is a life disempowering experience, one that privileges both immediacy over the future and welfare over work.
It's quite open.
Yeah. They use lots of kind of social justice-y language as well, don't they? Like privilege and disempowerment and experience.
Yeah.
But it's that the social justice types have plundered the psychological literature for terminology,
right? Okay.
To make it look like a legitimate scientific enterprise.
So we came first from psychology, but then got taken over and kind of exported elsewhere.
A lot of it actually comes from sociology, which kind of borrows from psychology quite a lot, mm-hmm. and vice versa, of course. But the terminology actually does have kind of like an objective meaning,
yep.
in science, but yep. not so much outside of it. Funnily
enough.
Yeah,
that makes sense, yeah.
But they're saying that this situation essentially resulted in learned helplessness because it manifested in a lack of will to take control of their life.
So if I understand correctly, what she's saying is that the T-shirt stopped being poor, is that correct?
So essentially, yeah, they're saying that...
Well, go on.
Technically speaking, they're saying it. I'm not actually saying anything. I'm just reading what they're reporting. Okay. But yeah, essentially, people who have been disadvantaged and had these disempowering experiences perhaps aren't able to help themselves because of their self-perception,
right.
rather than any objective thing that we can point to. Yeah. Although certainly there are material and tangible constraints in everyday life, of course. And they go on to say that cognitive changes, strategies, and things that focus on building in people their sense of self-efficacy, optimism, hope, resilience, and subjective well-being, as well as their emotional intelligence, all of which are mental attributes that have demonstrable positive impacts on human performance. And this allows people to gain meaningful and sustained self-actualizing vocation and therefore lifting them out of persistent material poverty. So that they're mm-hmm. basically saying that all of these positive psychological traits are what get people out of poverty. That's their argument here.
So they're saying the mental state comes first, and you need to kind of put yourself make yourself better in your own head, and then that's going to lead you to make yourself better in your real life.
Yeah, it's kind of the
real life. Okay, outside your own head.
it's like the kind of Petersonian view of like clean your room, and it will, you know, have positive effects on you. It's like sort out your mental well-being, and then it will have positive effects on your economic well-being. It's basically saying the things that liberals and conservatives have been saying for a very long time, that people have individual responsibility, and it's providing essentially scientific evidence to suggest that, and that that's how people are able to help themselves. And this also ties in very well with the neuroscientific findings, mm-hmm. that the default position is helplessness, because obviously our understanding of virtue is that it's learnt. We're not born virtuous.
Right.
At least, I don't think I was, but...
We're born in sin.
But yeah, that's I think that one's particularly interesting because it really emphasizes the nature of the thing and how it manifests very well. Also in a situation where I think most of us would think of when you hear the term learned helplessness.
Yeah.
You think, well, that's someone in a helpless situation. Well, that's someone in poverty, you know.
So are they also commenting on how you can overcome poverty or that, like, we talked about that mm-hmm. a little bit, but also, so if you have someone who is poor and like can't pay the bills, so like are not in a monetarily in a good situation,
sure.
that you, if you just give them money, you're not going to help them because it's not just about the money. That's what I see in mm-hmm. you know this first quote, which was mm-hmm. that material poverty is kind of correlated and tied closely to kind of mental lack of well-being.
Yeah, and I think we can also find evidence for that in real world politics as well. It's like how donating lots of money to a country's government doesn't always solve the problem, like, because you're just keeping them going as opposed to solving the underlying problem.
I mean, that's a factor, but also you're giving it to the ruling class rather than to people who need it.
Of course, yeah.
that's another factor.
I'm sure it all gets siphoned off.
Yeah, I understand your point. I mean, that's what happens like domestically as well, even mm-hmm. even like in countries where the money actually gets to the people, or at least some of the money actually gets to the people that need it. Often it doesn't help as much as you would like it to help, because these things are connected, right? Or is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say so. And although they don't try and make grand kind of claims about this is the reason that there are vast differences in society and stuff like that, they're trying to emphasize the point that these well-defined psychological constructs that we know exist, like we can measure self-efficacy and resilience and subjective well-being quite accurately. So they're referring to specific psychological phenomena mm-hmm. and they're saying that development of these things will help you in these situations, kind of irrespective of what your situation is. And they are ways of mitigating this default position of being, of learned helplessness.
Right. So presumably if like people are in a really like bad place, like, or they're just like, you know, in a bad situation, they never learn to overcome the helplessness. That it's also going to be somewhat hereditary, right, as well. So if they have children, like if they don't know how to overcome their own helplessness, they're not going to teach their children how to do it. So those people will need to find other sources to kind of learn it, but they won't have it from their own families, which like some other people will. And so
it's going to have like a snowballing effect where and obviously, it will also have an inverse effect in a positive sense, in that people who have cultivated these kind of psychological virtues are able to pass them on to other people quite well. In that, you can teach people to increase their subjective well-being just by telling them about what it is and how they can improve it. And so it's an entirely environmental thing. And although you're saying like things are hereditary, I wouldn't want to kind of confuse it and say that, you know, this is something that is inherited. You don't inherit.
Of course. I didn't mean like biological.
Of course,
anything.
I knew what you meant, like, but it could be confused, if you know what I mean.
That's a good point. What I meant is kind of like intergenerational kind of transmission of values and of abilities.
It's an entirely environmental theory. It makes no bearing on genes. Yeah. It's talking about how people interact with the environment, and that's the focus of it. And although I talk about the neuroscience of it, that's more the logistics of how it actually works in the brain, as opposed to it having some kind of biological and therefore genetic cause.
I would be actually really surprised if it was kind of genetic or anything like that. Something, some of this, like this, it doesn't seem to be like that's the case. And
no,
you say that's in the research, is mm-hmm. it doesn't seem to be.
It's like a rule of thumb in psychology. You can kind of see if something is easily affected by environmental factors, it probably mm-hmm. is one anyway.
Okay, yeah,
so,
yeah.
For example, your levels of testosterone, say, you can influence it a little bit with your environmental activity. So say you do lots of weightlifting,
yep.
it'll increase it, but your default will always remain the same because of your genes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this, there's no kind of gene for learned helplessness. There's nothing telling you, you know, this is the point where you have to stick. It's entirely up to you to kind of learn to help yourself.
So actually, from the social justice point of view, that's a good thing, because like nothing is set in stone.
Exactly,
you can help
yeah.
anyone.
Yeah,
anyone or anyone can help themselves, learn to help themselves, and you can help learn them.
It is a very positive thing, because yeah. it shows that no matter what your circumstances are, you can at least have some tangible improvements to your life, essentially. And the final study I wanted to look at looks at victimization.
Okay.
And essentially they say that the learned helplessness phenomenon is proposed as a model for emotional numbing, and that maladaptive passivity sometimes follows victimization. Victims may learn during the victimization episode that responding is futile. This learning is represented as an expectation of future response outcomes, independent of whether they feel helpless or not.
Right. So victimization is used in what sense here? Just like someone is being a recipient of something bad happening.
It's not necessarily being used in a classically objective sense. It's mm-hmm. just saying that if you perceive yourself as a victim, it could have this effect on your subsequent behavior, and this is through the process of learned helplessness.
Right.
So say I was the victim of like an armed like robbery or something. Yep. Next time I saw a gun, I might kind of freak out a bit more, because I've learned that I'm powerless to stop it.
Right. I see.
In that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And so like what does that mean with what we've talked about? Like is this just an explanation of how the process of not overcoming helplessness, how that kind of works? Or
I think it ties in well to the research into poverty, because it shows how someone who has experienced some tangible hardship can perceive themselves as a victim and not adjust their situation accordingly to not be a victim anymore, because it's been almost reinforced that they are.
Right.
And
right.
you can see that manifest in political life all the more in the modern day, perhaps more than any other time, because there are many people claiming to have these perceived injustices and being a victim of perhaps like a tweet that they didn't like. And essentially it's saying that because they don't have the mechanisms to deal with information that they don't like, they've learned to respond helplessly and call themselves a victim,
right.
rather than just dealing with like, okay, someone said something I didn't like, therefore, so what?
Right. So someone sends a bad tweet at you, and you see yourself as a victim, and that prevents you from actually dealing with it in mm-hmm. a productive way.
At least if that learned helplessness phenomenon is the kind of explanation for that.
Right.
Because of course, all of this research is relatively modern. It hasn't necessarily gone through intense replication, although yeah. it can be viewed as like a good kind of true north
right,
to yeah. find the truth.
You said in the beginning that there is a lot that needs to be explained.
Sure.
Kind of the correlation needs to mm-hmm. be investigated, whether it goes one way or the other. Things like that.
I think there is a problem with the public perception of the sciences, in that people think, okay, there's this research study, therefore this is the case, whereas it's impossible to say that. And most scientists will say, well, the study suggests something, but we don't know. It could be completely the opposite for all we know.
Right.
Like yeah. you've got to bear in mind that research isn't the be-all and end-all, and although it can reflect reality, it can be wrong. And
so, and it's also interpreted in the way to kind of serve other purposes rather than what it was you originally like intended to
do. That's a bit like the implicit association test, which I talked about in my unconscious bias podcast. In that the original authors just wanted to measure the unconscious mind, and it got taken to test unconscious racism, which you know, we don't know whether that is a thing for all we know, but it was taken.
It wasn't after the designed test was, to do that.
It was just a means of measuring unconscious psychological phenomena. But it was,
so like, we should be, what you're saying, that we should be careful to, you know, take this information that's coming out of these studies and present them as evidence of some kind of like grand thing or theory of ours. Just like, okay, this is an indication, but you need much more research, much more studies to kind of show where, like, what exactly is happening. Right?
I think it's quite a fun thing to speculate with, because it's got clear, demonstrable consequences, but it's very difficult to understand what they are and how it's involved. But we know it definitely happens in human beings because we've got the neuroscientific evidence.
Yep.
But the research still hasn't caught up with that yet in how that manifests in society. So I think there will be lots of people probably speculating in the comments about stuff.
So do you think that could happen like soon? This was 2016, right? That recent study. You think, like, are people working on it? Is there something that we were like that is like bound to come out?
So it's an area where there's been a lot of research, but it tends to be the case where people will tack on the kind of current trendy theory in their research, and that seems to have happened a lot in like the 70s, where they're doing something completely different, and then they're just like, we've included learned helplessness in the title, so come check out our research. And studies like that aren't so useful, because they've kind of just, you can kind of tell that they're just using
it as riding the wave.
But there are beginning to be more recent studies that look at it from more biological kind of point of view, that are trying to explain how it happens in the brain following this neuroscientific evidence. And it will also help kind of to suggest why your brain would produce this response. Like, we don't know what the benefit of being helpless as a default is. Like,
why that is that we're like that.
Why would that evolve?
Yeah.
And why would it be selected, unless it's just such an obscure thing in an evolutionary environment that it didn't really happen in, that people were always doing things to help themselves, and it's only part of modern life where we don't actually have to do nearly as much, that you can kind of find this phenomenon more in human beings. But it's
that's actually a good question, whether it only becomes relevant in like a civilizational environment, right?
Yeah,
because before that, we're like, when you're just like scrambling for resources, like
you don't have the time to feel helpless. You kind of know you are already. It's you against nature, sort of thing. Yeah. So you know the rules and what you have to do. So it's no point protesting, saying it's unfair and you're helpless to change it, because all human beings are going to start off more or less at the same point, and especially as it's like a perception thing, it's how people perceive themselves in the world. In the past, they would have had no frame of reference, whereas in the modern day, people have a vast kind of array of access to other people's lives and what they do, and are very aware of the differences. Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. So just like, to just wrap it up, what would you say is the like main takeaway? So we know that there is such a thing as learned helplessness,
sure,
and that it's actually the default position, and that people can do things to overcome it and to kind of do things in their life to not be helpless and to be able to affect their own.
So, and it's kind of my understanding that kind of cultivating these kind of Aristotelian virtues, in that kind of being conscientious, open to experience, and all of the other big five personality traits, mm-hmm. and having positive values in all of those is how you help yourself. It's cultivating these sorts of things in your own mental life is how you help yourself from feeling helpless. Yeah. Who would have guessed? Yeah. I mean, it seems pretty intuitive to everyday people, doesn't it? But now we've got the science.
At least that's a positive note to end on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.